Otto emerged very slowly and nervously from behind the lens. He was thin, pale, and wore little oval dark glasses. He still clutched the twist of black ribbon as if it was a talisman, which it more or less was. "It's all right. We won't bite you," said Saccharissa.
"And one good turn deserves another, eh?" said Goodmountain.
"That was a bit tasteless, Mr. Goodmountain," said Saccharissa.
"So am I," said the dwarf, turning back to the stone. "Just so long as people know where I stand, that's all."
"You will not be sorry," said Otto. "I am completely reformed, I assure you. What is it you want me to take pictures of, please?"
"News," said William.
"What is news, please?"
"News is," William began, "news is what we put in the paper."
"What do you think of this, eh?" said a cheerful voice.
William turned. There was a horribly familiar face looking at him over the top of a cardboard box.
"Hello, Mr. Wintler," he said. "Saccharissa, I wonder if you could just go and—"
He wasn't quick enough. Mr. Wintler, a man of the variety that thinks a whoopee cushion is the last word in repartee, was not the kind to let a mere freezing reception stand in his way.
"I was digging in my garden this morning and came up with this parsnip, and I thought, that young man at the paper will laugh himself silly when he sees it, because my lady wife couldn't keep a straight face, and—"
To William's horror, he was already reaching into the box.
"Mr. Wintler, I really don't think—"
But the hand was already rising, and there was a sound of something scraping on the side of the box.
"I bet the young lady here would like a good chuckle too, eh?"
William shut his eyes. He heard Saccharissa gasp. Then she said,
"Golly, it's amazingly lifelike."
William opened his eyes.
"Oh, it's a nose," he said. "A parsnip with a sort of knobbly face and a huge nose."
"You want I shall take a picture?" said Otto.
"Yes," said William, drunk with relief. "Take a big picture of Mr. Wintler and his wonderfully nasal parsnip, Otto. Your first job, yes, indeed."
Mr. Wintler beamed.
"And shall I run back home and fetch my carrot?" he said.
"No,"
said William and Goodmountain in whiplash unison.
"You want the picture right now?" said Otto.
"We certainly do," said William.
"The sooner we can let him go home, the sooner our Mr. Wintler can find another wonderfully humorous vegetable, eh, Mr. Wintler? What will it be next time? A bean with ears? A beetroot shaped like a potato? A sprout with an enormous hairy tongue?"
"Right here and now is when you want the picture," said Otto,
anxiety hanging off every syllable.
"Right now, yes.
As a matter of fact, there is a Swede coming along that I've got great hopes of,"
Mr. Wintler began.
"Oh, well, if you will look this way, Mr. Wintler," said Otto.
He got behind the iconograph and uncovered the lens. William got a glimpse of the imp peering out, brush poised. In his spare hand, Otto slowly held up, on a stick, a cage containing a fat and drowsing salamander. Finger poised on the trigger, it would bring a small hammer down on its head, just hard enough to annoy it.
"Be smiling, please."
"Hold on," said Saccharissa. "Should a vampire really—"
Click.
The salamander flared, etching the room with searing white light and dark shadows. Otto screamed. He fell to the floor, clutching at his throat. He sprang to his feet, goggle-eyed and gasping, and staggered, knock-kneed and wobbly-legged, the length of the room and back again. He sank down behind a desk, scattering paperwork with a wildly flailing hand. And then there was a shocked silence. Otto stood up, adjusted his cravat, and dusted himself off. Only then did he look up at the row of shocked faces.
"Well," he said sternly, "what you're all looking at? It is just a normal reaction, that is all. I'm working on it. Light in all its forms is my passion. Light is my canvas, shadows are my brush."
"But strong light hurts you," said Saccharissa. "It hurts vampires."
"Yes, it is a bit of a bugger, but there you go."
"And that happens every time you take the picture, does it?" said William.
"No, sometimes it is a lot worse."
"Worse?
I sometimes crumble to dust, but that which does not kill us makes us strong."
"Strong?
Indeed."
William caught Saccharissa's gaze. Her look said it all. "We've hired him? Have we got the heart to fire him now? And don't make fun of his accent, unless your Ubervaltian is really good, okay?" Otto adjusted the iconograph and inserted a fresh sheet.
"And now shall we try one more?" he said brightly. and this time everybody smile.
Mail was arriving. William was used to a certain amount, usually from clients of his newsletter, complaining that he hadn't told them about the double-headed giants, plagues, and rains of domestic animals that they had heard had been happening in Ankh-Morpork. His father had been right about one thing, at least, when he'd asserted that lies could run round the world before the truth could get its boots on. And it was amazing how people wanted to believe them. These were... Well, it was as if he'd shaken a tree and all the nuts had fallen out. Several letters were complaining that there had been much colder winters than this, although no two of them could agree when it was. One said vegetables were not as funny as they used to be, especially leeks. Another asked what the Guild of Thieves was doing about unlicensed crime in the city. There was one saying that all these robberies were down to dwarfs who shouldn't be allowed into the city to steal the work out of honest humans' mouths. "Put a title like Letters on the top and put them in," said William. "Except the one about the dwarfs. That sounds like Mr. Windling. It sounds like my father, too, except that at least he can spell undesirable and wouldn't use crayon." "Why not that letter?" "Because it's offensive." "Some people think it's true, though," said Saccharissa. "There's been a lot of trouble." "Yes, but we shouldn't print it." William called Goodmountain over and showed him the letter. The dwarf read it. "Put it in," he suggested. "It'll fill a few inches."
"But people will object," said William.
"Good. Put their letters in, too."
Saccharissa sighed.
"We'll probably need them," she said. "William, Grandfather says no one in the guild will engrave the iconographs for us."
"Why not? We can afford the rates."
"We're not guild members. It's all getting unpleasant. Will you tell Otto?"
William sighed and walked over to the ladder. The dwarfs used the cellar as a bedroom, being naturally happier with a floor over their heads. Otto had been allowed to use a dank corner, which he'd made his own by hanging an old sheet across on a rope.
"Oh, hello, Mr. William," he said,
pouring something noxious from one bottle into another.
"I'm afraid it looks as if we won't get anyone to engrave your pictures," said William.
The vampire seemed unmoved by this.
"Yes, I've wondered about that. So I'm sorry to say that..."
"No problem, Mr. William. There is always a way."
"How? You can't engrave, can you?"
"No, but all we are printing is black and white, yes? And the paper is white, so all we are really printing is black, okay? I looked at how the dwarfs do the letters, and they have all these bits of metal lying around, and... You know how the engravers can engrave metal with acid?"
"Yes."
"So, all I have to do is teach the imps to paint with acid. End of problem. Getting grey took a bit of thought, but I think I have..."
"You mean you can get the imps to etch the picture straight onto a plate?"
"Yes. It is one of those ideas that are obvious when you think about it."
Otto looked wistful.
"And I think about light all the time. All the time."
William vaguely remembered something someone had once said. The only thing more dangerous than a vampire crazed with bloodlust was a vampire crazed with anything else. All the meticulous single-mindedness that went into finding young women who slept with their bedroom window open was channeled into some other interest, with merciless and painstaking efficiency.
"Why do you need to work in a dark room, though?" he said. "The imps don't need it, do they?"
"Ah, this is for my experiment," said Otto proudly. "You know that another term for an iconographer would be photographer, from the old word photos in Latin, which means..."
"To prance around like a pillock, ordering everyone about as if you owned the place," said William.
"Ah, you know it."
William nodded. He'd always wondered about that word.
"Well, I am working on an obscurograph."
William's forehead wrinkled. It was turning into a long day.
"Taking pictures with darkness?" he ventured.
"With true darkness, to be precise," said Otto,
excitement entering his voice.
"Not just the absence of light, the light on the other side of darkness. You could call it living darkness. We can't see it, but imps can. Did you know the Oberwaldian deep cave land eel emits a burst of dark light when startled?"
William glanced at a large glass jar on the bench. A couple of ugly things were coiled up in the bottom.
"And that will work, will it?"
"I think so. Hold it 1 minute."
"I really ought to be getting back.
This will not take a second.
Otto gently lifted one of the eels out of its jar and put it into the hod usually occupied by a salamander. He carefully aimed one of his iconographs at William and nodded.
One, two, three, boo!
There was a soft, noiseless implosion, a very brief sensation of the world being screwed up small, frozen, smashed into little tiny sharp pins and hammered through every cell of William's body. In many ways, William de Worde had quite a graphic imagination. Then the gloom of the cellar flowed back.
"That was very strange," said William, blinking. "It was like something very cold walking through me."
"Much may be learnt about dark light now we have left our disgusting past behind us and have emerged into the bright new future where we do not think about the B-word all day in any way at all," said Otto, fiddling with the iconograph.
He looked hard at the picture the imp had painted and then glanced up at William.
"Oh, well, back to the drawing board," he said.
"Can I see?"
"It would embarrass me," said Otto,
putting the square of cardboard down on his makeshift bench.
"All the time I am doing things wrong."
"Oh, but I'd..."
"Mr. de Worde, there's something happening."
The bellow came from Rocky, whose head eclipsed the hole.
"What is it?"
"Something at the palace. Someone's been killed."
William sprang up the ladder. Saccharissa was sitting at a desk looking pale.
"Someone's assassinated Vetinari?"
No, said Saccharissa. "Not exactly." Down in the cellar, Otto Schriek picked up the dark light iconograph and looked at it again. Then he scratched it with a long, pale finger, as if trying to remove something.
"Strange," he said.
The imp hadn't imagined it, he knew. Imps had no imagination whatsoever. They didn't know how to lie. He looked around the bare cellar suspiciously.
"Is there anyone there?" he said. "Is anyone playing such silly buggers?"
Thankfully, there was no answer. Dark light, oh dear. There were lots of theories about dark light.
"Otto!"
He glanced up, shoving the picture into his pocket.
"Yes, Mr. William?"
"Get your stuff together and come along with me. Lord Vetinari's murdered someone. It is alleged," William added, "and it can't possibly be true."
It sometimes seemed to William that the whole population of Ankh Morpork was simply a mob waiting to happen. It was mostly spread thin, like some kind of great amoeba all across the city. But when something happened somewhere, it contracted around that point like a cell around a piece of food, filling the streets with people. It was growing around the main gates to the palace. It came together apparently at random. A knot of people would attract other people and become a bigger, more complicated knot. Carts and sedan chairs would stop to find out what was going on. The invisible beast grew bigger. There were watchmen on the gate instead of the palace guard. This was a problem. "Let me in, I'm nosy," was not a request likely to achieve success. It lacked a certain authority.
"Why are we stopping?" said Otto.
"That's Sergeant Detritus on the gate," said William.
"Ah, a troll, very stupid," opined Otto.
"But hard to fool. I'm afraid I shall have to try the truth."
"Why will that work?"
"He's a policeman. The truth usually confuses them. They don't often hear it."
The big troll sergeant watched William impassively as he approached. It was a proper policeman's stare. It gave nothing away. It said, "I can see you. Now I'm waiting to see what you're going to do that's wrong."
"Good morning, sergeant," said William.
A nod from the troll indicated that he was prepared to accept, on available evidence, that it was morning and, in certain circumstances, by some people, it might be considered good.
"I urgently need to see Commander Vimes."
"Oh, yes?"
"Yes, indeed."
"And does he urgently need to see you?"
The troll leaned closer.
"You're Mr. de Worde, right?"
"Yes, I work for the Times."
"I don't read that,"
said the troll.
"Really? We'll bring out a large print edition," said William.
"That was a very funny joke," said Detritus. "Thing is, thick though I am the one that's saying you can stay outside, so what's that vampire doing?"
"Hold it just one second," said Otto.
"Woomph!
Damn, 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 damn!"
Detritus
watched Otto roll around on the cobbles, screaming.
"What was dat about?"
he said eventually. "He's taken a picture of you not letting me into the palace," said William. Detritus, although born above the snowline on some distant mountain, a troll who had never seen a human until he was 5 years old, nevertheless was a policeman to his craggy, dragging fingertips, and reacted accordingly.
"He can't do dat,"
he said. William pulled out his notebook and poised his pencil. "Could you explain to my readers exactly why not?" he said. Detritus looked around, a little worried.
"Where are they?"
"No, I mean I'm going to write down what you say." Basic policing rushed to Detritus's aid once again.
"You can't do that,"
he said. "Then can I write down why I can't write anything down?" William said, smiling brightly. Detritus reached up and moved a little lever on the side of his helmet. A barely audible whirring noise became fractionally louder. The troll had a helmet with a clockwork fan to blow air across his silicon brain when overheating threatened to reduce its operating efficiency. Right now, he obviously needed a cooler head.
"Ah, this is some kind of politics, right?"
he said. Maybe. Sorry." Otto had staggered to his feet and was fiddling with the iconograph again. Detritus reached a decision. He nodded to a constable.
"Fiddiment, you take these two to Mr. Vimes. They are not to fall down any steps on the way or any stuff like that."
Mr. Vimes, thought William, as they hurried after the constable. All the watchmen called him that. The man had been a knight and was now a duke and a commander, but they called him Mr. And it was Mr., too, the full two syllables, not the everyday unheeded Mr. It was the Mr. you used when you wanted to say things like, "Put down that crossbow and turn around real slow, mister." He wondered why. William had not been brought up to respect the watch. They weren't our kind of people. It was conceded that they were very useful, like sheepdogs, because clearly someone had to keep people in order, heavens knew. But only a fool would let a sheepdog sleep in the parlour. The watch, in other words, was a regrettably necessary subset of the criminal classes. A section of the population informally defined by Lord de Word as anyone with less than $1,000 a year. William's family and everyone they knew also had a mental map of the city that was divided into parts where you found upstanding citizens and other parts where you found criminals. It had come as a shock to them. No, he corrected himself, it had come as an affront to learn that Vimes operated on a different map. Apparently, he'd instructed his men to use the front door when calling at any building, even in broad daylight, when sheer common sense said that they should use the back, just like any other servant. William's class understood that justice was like coal or potatoes. You ordered it when you needed it. The man simply had no idea. That Vetinari had made him a duke was just another example of the patrician's lack of grip. William, therefore, felt predisposed to like Vimes, if only because of the type of enemies he made. But as far as he could see, everything about the man could be prefaced by the word badly, as in spoken, educated, and in need of a drink. Fiddiment stopped in the big hall of the palace. "Don't you go anywhere, and don't you do anything," he said. "I'll go and..." But Vimes was already coming down the wide stairs, trailed by a giant of a man William recognised as Captain Carrot. You could add dressed to Vimes's list. It wasn't that he wore bad clothes. He just seemed to generate an internal scruffiness field. The man could rumple a helmet. Fiddiment met them halfway. There was a muttered conversation, out of which the unmistakable words, "He's what?" arose in Vimes's voice. He glared darkly at William. The expression was clear. It said, "It's been a bad day, and now there's you." Vimes walked the rest of the way down the stairs and looked William up and down. "What is it you're wanting?" he demanded. "I want to know what's happened here, please," said William. "Why?" "Because people will want to know." "Ha! They'll find out soon enough." "But who from, sir?" Vimes walked around William as if he was examining some strange new thing. "You're Lord de Word's boy, aren't you?" "Yes, Your Grace." "Commander will do," said Vimes sharply. "And you write that little gossipy thing, right?" "Broadly, sir,"
What was it you did to Sergeant Detritus?
I only wrote down what he said, sir.
Aha! Pulled a pen on him, eh?
Sir?
Writing things down at people. That sort of thing only causes trouble.
Vimes stopped walking around William, but having him glare from a few inches away was no improvement.
This has not been a nice day, he said, and it's going to get a lot worse. Why should I waste my time talking to you?
I can tell you one good reason, said William.
Well, go on, then.
You should talk to me so that I could write it down, sir. All neat and correct. The actual words you say right down there on the paper. And you know who I am, and if I get them wrong, you know where to find me.
So? You're telling me that if I do what you want, you'll do what you want?
I'm saying, sir, that a lie can run round the world before the truth has got its boots on.
Ha! You just make that up.
No, sir, but you know it's true.
Vimes sucked on his cigar.
And you'll let me see what you've written?
Of course. I'll make sure you get one of the first papers off the press, sir.
I meant before it gets published, and you know it.
To tell you the truth, no, I don't think I should do that, sir.
I am commander of the watch, lad.
Yes, sir, and I'm not. I think that's my point, really, although I'll work on it some more.
Vimes stared at him a little too long. Then, in a slightly different tone of voice, he said,
Lord Vetinari was seen by three cleaning maids of the household staff, all respectable ladies, after they were alerted by the barking of his lordship's dog at about 7 o'clock this morning. He said, here Vimes consulted his own notebook, I've killed him, I'm sorry. They saw what looked very much like a body on the floor. Lord Vetinari was holding a knife. They ran downstairs to fetch someone. On their return, they found his lordship missing. The body was that of Rufus Drumknot, the patrician's personal secretary. He had been stabbed and is seriously ill. A search of the buildings located Lord Vetinari in the stables. He was unconscious on the floor. An horse was saddled. The saddlebags contained $70,000. Captain, this is damn stupid.
I know, sir, said Carrot. They are the facts, sir.
But they're not the right facts, they're stupid facts.
I know, sir. I can't imagine his lordship trying to kill anyone.
Are you mad? Said Vimes. I can't imagine him saying sorry.
Vimes turned and glared at William, as if surprised to find him still there.
Yes? He demanded.
Why was his lordship unconscious, sir?
Vimes shrugged.
It looks as though he was trying to get on the horse. He's got a game leg. Maybe he slipped. I can't believe I'm saying this. Anyway, that's your lot, understand?
I'd like to get an iconograph of you, please, William persisted.
Why?
William thought fast.
It will reassure the citizens that you are on the case and handling this personally, Commander. My iconographer is just downstairs.
Otto! Good gods, a damn vamp...
Vimes began.
He's a black ribboner, sir,
Carrot whispered. Vimes rolled his eyes.
Good morning, said Otto. Do not be moving, please. You are making a good pattern of light and shade.
He kicked out the legs of the tripod, peered into the iconograph and raised a salamander in its cage.
Looking this way, please.
Click.
Woomph. Oh, shit!
Dust floated to the floor. In the midst of it, a twist of black ribbon spiralled down. There was a moment of shocked silence. Then Vimes said,
What the hell happened just then?
Too much flash, I think, said William.
He reached down with a trembling hand and retrieved a small square of card that was sticking out of the little grey cone of the late Otto Shriek.
Do not be alarmed, he read. The former bearer of this card has suffered a minor accident. You will need a drop of blood from any species and a dustpan and brush.
Well, the kitchens are over that way, said Vimes. Sort him out. I don't want my men treading him in all over the damn place.
One last thing, sir. Would you like me to say that if anyone saw anything suspicious, they should tell you, sir?
Said William.
In this town, we'd need every man on the watch just to control the queue. Just you be careful what you write, that's all.
The two watchmen strode away, Carrot giving William a wan smile as he passed. William busied himself in carefully scraping up Otto with two pages from his notebook and depositing the dust in the bag the vampire used to carry his equipment. Then it dawned on him that he was alone, Otto probably didn't count at the moment, in the palace with Commander Vimes's permission to be there. If
"The kitchens are over that way," could be parlayed into permission. And William was good with words. Truth was what he told. Honesty was sometimes not the same thing. He picked up the bag and found his way to the back stairs and the kitchen, whence came a hubbub. Staff were wandering around with a bewildered air of people with nothing to do, who were nevertheless still being paid to do it. William sidled over to a maid who was sobbing into a grubby handkerchief.
"Excuse me, miss, but could you let me have a drop of blood?" "Yes, perhaps this isn't the right moment," he added nervously, as she fled shrieking.
"Here, what did you say to Irene?" said a thick-set man, putting down a tray of hot loaves.
"Are you the baker?" said William.
The man gave him a look.
"What does it look like?"
"I can see what it looks like," said William. There was another look, but this one had just a measure of respect in it.
"I'm still asking the question," he went on.
"I'm the butcher, as it happens," said the man. "Well done. The baker's off sick. And who are you asking me questions?"
"Commander Vimes sent me down here," said William. He was appalled at the ease with which the truth turned into something that was almost a lie, just by being positioned correctly. He opened his notebook. "I'm from the Times. Did you—"
"What, the paper?" said the butcher.
"That's right. Did you—"
"Ha! You got it completely up your bum about the winter, you know. You should have said it was the year of the ant. That was the worst. You should have asked me. I could have put you right."
"And you are—"
"Sidney Clancy and Son, age 39, 11 long hog meat, purveyors of finest cat and dog meats to the gentry. Why aren't you writing it down?"
"Lord Veterinary eats pet food?"
"He doesn't eat much of anything, from what I hear. No, I delivers for his dog. Finest stuff, prime. We sell only the best at 11 long hog meat, open every day from 6 a.m. to mid—"
"Oh, his dog, right," said William.
He looked around at the throng. Some of those people could tell him things, and he was talking to a dog-meat man. Still,
"Could you let me have a tiny piece of meat?" he said.
"Are you going to put it in the paper?"
"Yes, sort of, in a way."
William found a quiet alcove hidden from the general excitement, and gingerly let the piece of meat dribble one drop of blood onto the little grey pile. The dust mushroomed up into the air, became a mass of coloured flecks, became Otto Creek.
"How was that fun?" he said.
"Oh, I think you got the picture," said William.
Your jacket."
Part of the sleeve of the vampire's jacket was now the colour and texture of the stair carpet in the big hall, a rather dull pattern of red and blue.
"Carpet dust got mixed in, I expect," said Otto. "Do not be alarmed. Happens all the time."
He sniffed the sleeve.
"Finest steak, thank you."
"It was dog food," said William the truthful.
"Dog food?"
"Yes, grab your stuff and follow me."
"Dog food?"
"You did say it was finest steak. Lord Veterinary is kind to his dog. Look, don't complain to me. If this sort of thing happens a lot, then you ought to carry a little bottle of emergency blood. Otherwise, people will do the best they can."
"Well, yes, fine, thank you, anyway," the vampire mumbled, trailing behind him.
"Dog food? Dog food? Oh, dear me. Where are we going now?"
"To the oblong office to see where the attack was made," said William. "I just hope it isn't being guarded by someone clever."
"We will get into a lot of trouble."
"Why?" said William.
He'd been thinking the same thing, but why? The palace belonged to the city, more or less. The watch probably wouldn't like him going in there, but William felt in his bones that you couldn't run a city on the basis of what the watch liked. The watch would probably like it if everyone spent their time indoors with their hands on the table where people could see them.